mantra one. Everything animate or inanimate that is within the universe is controlled and owned by the Lord. One should therefore accept only those things necessary for himself, which are set aside as his quota, and one should not accept others knowing well to whom they belong. Mantra 2. One may aspire to live for hundreds if he continuously goes on working in that way, for that sort of work will not bind to the law of karma. There is no alternative to this way then. Text 3. The killer soul, whoever he may be, must enter into the planets known as the Wood of the Faithless, full of darkness and ignorance. Mantra 4. Although fixed in his abode, the personality of Godhead is swifter than the mind and can overcome all others run. The powerful demigods cannot approach him, although in one place he controls those who supply the air and the rain, he surpasses all in excellence. Mantra 5. The Supreme Lord walks and does not walk. He is far away, but he is very near as well. He is within everything, and yet he is outside of everything. Mantra 6. He who sees everything in relation to the Supreme Lord, who sees all entities as its parts and parcels, and who sees the Supreme Lord within everything, never hates anything nor any being. Mantra 7. One who sees all living entities as spiritual sparks and quality, and with the Lord, becomes a true knower of things. What can be illusion or anxiety for him? Mantra 8. Such a person must factually know the greatest of all, who is omniscient, beyond reproach, without veins, pure and uncontaminated, self-sufficient philosopher who has been fulfilling everyone's desires since time immemorial. Mantra 9. Those who engage in the culture of nescient activities shall enter into the darkest region of ignorance. Worse still are those engaged in the culture of soul knowledge. Mantra 10. The wise have explained that one result is derived from the culture of knowledge and that a different result is obtained from the culture of nescience. Mantra 11. Only one learn the process of nescience and that of transcendental knowledge side by side can transcend the influence of repeated birth and death and enjoy the full blessings of immortality. Mantra 12. Those who are engaged in worship of the demigods enter into the darkest region of ignorance, and still more so do worshippers of the impersonal absolute. 13. It is said that one result is obtained by worshipping the supreme cause of causes, and that another result is obtained by worshipping that not supreme. All this is heard from the undisturbed authority clearly explained it. Mantra 14. One should know perfectly the personality of Godhead and his transcendental name, as well as the temporary material creation with its temp demigods, men and animals. When one knows these, he surpasses death and ephemeral cosmic manifestation with it, and in the kingdom of God he enjoys his eternal life of bliss and knowledge. Mantra 15. O my Lord, sustainer of all that lives, your race is covered by your dazzling effulgence. Please remove that covering and give it yourself to your pure devotee. Mantra 16. O my Lord, O primeval philosopher, maintainer of the universe, O regulating principle, destination of the pure devotees, well-wisher of the progenitors of mankind, please remove the effulgent transcendental rays so that I can see your form of bliss. You are the eternal supreme personality of Godhead. Come to the sun as am I. Mantra 17. Let this temporary body be burned to ashes, and let the air of life emerge with the totality of air. Now, my Lord, please remember all my sacrifices, and because you are the ultimate beneficiary, please remember all that I have done for you. And Mantra 18. O my Lord, powerful as fire, omnipotent one, now I offer you all obeisances and fall on the ground at your... O my Lord, please lead me on the right path to reach you, and since you know all that I am in the past, please free my reactions to my past sins, so that there will be hindrance to my progress. We're back in the introduction. I have a page marker on Roman numeral 12. Is this going to do the same? It's not plugged in. All batteries? Alright. Great. is on the page from the middle of the first minute. On the right hand side, there we are. From the introduction, originally there was only, you know where we are? Page 13, on the right side of the page. Originally there was only one Veda. There was no necessity of reading it. People were so intelligent and had such sharp memories that by once hearing from the lips of the Spinaster, they would understand. They would immediately grasp the whole purport. But 5,000 years ago, Vyasadeva put the Vedas in writing for the people in this age, Kali Yuga. He knew that eventually the people were short-lived, their memories would be very poor, and their intelligence would not be very sharp. Quote, therefore let me teach this Vedic not in writing, unquote. He divided the Vedas into four, Rig, Sama, Atharva, and Yajur. He gave the charge of these Vedas to his different disciples. He then thought of the less intelligent class of men, Shudra and Dvijabandhu. He considered the human class and the Shudra class, worker class, and Dvijabandhu. Dvijabandhu refers to those who are born in a high family and who are not properly qualified. A man born in the family of a Brahmana who is not qualified as a Brahmana, called Dvijabandhu. For these persons compiled Mahabharata, called the History of India, and the 18 Puranas. These are all Vedic literatures, the Puranas, the Mahabharata, the Vedas, and the Upanishads. The Upanishads are part of the Vedas. Then Vyasadeva summarized all Vedic knowledge for scholars and philosophers, what is called Vedanta Sutra. This is the last word of the Vedas. Vyasadeva personally wrote Vedanta Sutra under the instructions of Narada, his Guru Maharaj, spiritual master. Still he was not satisfied. That is a long story described in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Vedavyasa was not very satisfied even after finding many Puranas, Upanishads, and even after Vedanta Sutra. Then his spiritual master Narada instructed him, you explain Vedanta. Vedanta means ultimate knowledge. And the ultimate knowledge is Krishna. Krishna says that throughout all the Vedas one has to understand Krishna. Vedanta Vedavit Eva Chaham. Krishna says, I am the compiler of Vedanta, and I am the knower of the Vedas. So this is one of the verses also referenced in these photocopies. Vedais Chasaivaya Aham Eva Vedya. Chapter 15, text 15. Seated in everyone's heart is come to come to remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. By all this, I am to be known. Indeed, I am the compiler of Vedanta. So Krishna is saying that he's the compiler of Vedanta, and yet Vyasadeva, although called the compiler of the Vedanta, he wrote it down. Vyasadeva is the compiler in the sense that he wrote it. He wrote it down what was already verbally present. He made it up. He just wrote down the sutra. So although he wrote it down, he was not feeling satisfied. So then Narada told him, you explain it. Make a commentary. So then that's the Srimad Bhagavatam. Excuse me? Well, yeah. He was the scribe. He was the secretary. Took short of But from the reference that's being made here is that Krishna is saying Bhagavad Gita, I am the compiler of Vedanta, and through Vedanta I am to be known. So, any explanation of the Vedanta Sutra has to expose or reveal Krishna. What Prabhupada goes on to describe is so many commentaries have been written, they're not all revealing Krishna. Therefore, the ultimate objective is Krishna. That is explained in all the Vaishnava commentary on Vedanta philosophy. We Gaudiya Vaishnavas have our commentary on Vedanta philosophy called Govinda Bhasya by Baladev Vidyabhushan. There's a nice story about Baladev Vidyabhushan giving his commentary. That's in Bhagavatam class? Not so long ago, as you did it. There is a contemporary Baladev Vidyabhushan, and it was a really good story. That just like Krishnadas Kaviraj, he didn't want to write about the pastimes of Gojek because he felt himself qualified. But all the Vaishnavas hated with him because he was so old, practically contemporary of Gojek Kanya. And, you know, some numbers of years later, he was the only one that knew anything of Gojek Kanya, who had the direct experience sort of being with him. He was a great Vaishnava. So that pleading wasn't right, so he didn't want to, but to the pleading of the Vaishnavas, he went to the deity to ask permission from the deity to write, and deity, Carl and Drop, and was given to, so he was accepting that as a son of Dharma Mohan, that he should go ahead with the writing. So, Sema, the Vaishnava commentary written by Baladev Vidyabhushan, like that. He didn't want to write, because he didn't, because the previous Acharya, in this specific succession, Srila Vyasadeva already had the commentary. So he didn't want to make the Vaishnava aparad of trying to supersede the previous acharya. So he didn't want to write the commentary. But there was the Vaishnava line was being the question, the validity that you don't have, you didn't even have a commentary done, so how can you're not even respectable? So they were pleading with Baladev Vidyabhushan to make the commentary. And similarly so with the concept of Vaishnavas. And practically on the order of Vaishnavas he wrote. And that's the Govinda. Similarly, Anudhacharya has a commentary and Madhvacharya has one. Because Baladev Vidyabhushan is in our reciprocal line. Why the Madhvacharya commentary was not explored on that. Anyway, the version of Shankaracharya is not the only commentary. There are many Vedanta commentaries. But because Vaishnavas did not present the first Vedanta commentary, people are under the wrong impression that Shankaracharya is the only Vedanta commentary. Besides that, Vyasadeva himself wrote the perfect Vedanta commentary, Srimad Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavatam also begins with the first words of the Vedanta Sutra, Janmadhya Yataha. So that reference is that the very first line of Canto 1, Chapter 1, Verse 1 of the Bhagavatam begins with this Janmadhya Yataha. And so that's also the very first sutra of the Vedanta Sutra, of all the sutras that first one. So, that here's the translation of what that sutra means. The Vedanta Sutra simply hints at what is Brahman, the Absolute Truth. Quote, the Absolute Truth is that from which everything emanates, or that from whom everything emanates. That's the meaning of Janmadhyasa Yetana. That little phrase is worth memorizing. Janma means birth, just like Janmasana. Janma means birth. So, Janmadhyasa Yetana. Janmadi, where everything comes from, that is the Absolute. This is a summary, but it is explained in detail in Srimad Bhagavatam if everything is emanating from the Absolute Truth, then what is the nature of the Absolute Truth explained in Srimad Bhagavatam? The Absolute Truth must be conscious. He is self-effulgent, Svarat. We develop our consciousness and knowledge by receiving knowledge from others, but for him it is that he is self-effulgent. The whole summary of Vedic knowledge is the Vedanta Sutra, and the Vedanta Sutra is explained by the writer himself in Srimad Bhagavatam. We finally request those who are actually after Vedic knowledge to try to understand the explanation of all Vedic knowledge from Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita. So this term Svarat is part of the Bhagavatam verse. That's also chapter 1, text 1. The one page has that. The word Svarat is at the end of the first line. Janmadhyasa yataha Janmadhyasa yaton vayadipira tashchartesho adhigya Svarat. Svarat, fully independent. Here Prabhupada in the Bhagavatam translates Svarat as fully independent, and here in the Ishopad is self-effulgent. He's using self-effulgent in terms of knowledge. Krishna doesn't need, as we need to gather knowledge by hearing from other sources, Krishna doesn't need to do that. He's self-effulgent. From him, knowledge is, that's the other verse that Prabhupada already quoted here. Vedaishtasaya aham eva vejo vedanta krit veda vid eva chama. From him, and similarly from that same verse, Krishna saying, Sarva Chichaham Vidhi Sannivishtam. Vidhi, this term, Vidhi means heart. Vidyan Taksavya Bhadrani. Vidhi means heart. Sarva Chichaham Vidhi Sannivishtam. I am seated in everyone's heart, Krishna says. From me comes the member's knowledge and forgetfulness. And what is that knowledge? She says, by the Vedas I am to be known. Indeed, I am the compiler of Vedanta, I am the knower of the Vedas. Now, right here it's saying that perfect knowledge is already there within us because he's situated there, because perfect knowledge is constant. But also it's an external Vedic literature. First sound, then recorded sound, compiled by Srila Vyasadeva. So, only, just as this term Svarat is used, only Krishna, whose knowledge is effulgent, coming from himself entirely, is he. He said that he's independent. He's not dependent as we are. He's not dependent on knowledge from any other source. He's independent and knowledgeable. And knowledge is needed for everything that we do. Without Krishna in our heart giving knowledge and direction, of course that's a little inconceivable, but in the spiritual world the super soul does not accompany the jiva. Did you know that? The Paramatma, this description is there about Paramatma, that Paramatma is so kind upon the living entity that Paramatma, the Supreme Lord, accompanies the living entity through all the different species and forms of life. God himself goes through that with complete detachment, that accompanies the Jiva soul. But once the jiva soul returns to the spiritual world, then that paramatma manifestation, only present within the spiritual world, does not accompany soul back to the spiritual world. But the individual soul associates directly with Krishna himself, the two-handed form of Krishna. So in that way, you see, individual soul is always in contact with the Supreme Lord in the material world in a position of forgetfulness, in which case then that's paramatma, simply observing and witnessing. So in that way Krishna is fully independent. His paramatma's accompanying the jiva soul is done fully independently. But the jiva soul is going through body to body, that's not fully independent. He's being forced. And his knowledge is covered. So full knowledge for the individual soul is to be in communication or in contact with or in union with the Supreme through yoga process. There, I wanted to make mention also of each of these terms, just to review them. The different terms that Krishna is addressed by. Ananta. What do you mean Ananta? Yeah? Ananta means unlimited, it specifically means without beginning. Something that has no beginning means it also has no end, so it's unlimited. Krishna was called Ananta when Prabhupada was writing that knowledge can only come in the descending process through sound bites and through the disciple succession. And after proving that so many times over, then he began listing a number of qualities that Krishna has, one of which is Ananta, that by mundane calculating, how can you measure something that doesn't have a limit to it, a beginning or an end to it? Either whether it's sound or form or something that the senses can perceive, if it doesn't have a beginning or an end, there's no way to measure it. The spiritual sky is like that. There's no beginning and there's no end to it. Or the forms of the Lord, they're also without limit. Then another is that Krishna is simultaneously in the spiritual sky in Vaikuntha planets, presiding over the spiritual planets, but he's simultaneously everywhere at the time. Localized and all-pervasive in an individual feature. So what's the term? Explain that. That seeming contradiction. There's another Sanskrit term, inconceivable. Achintya. Then another one that was mentioned is that when he was on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, he was over 100 years old, he had grandchildren, hunting thousands. And thousands of things showing him. But he appeared like a young boy. So what's that term?
Insensitive.
Ever youthful. Never yogin. Have you heard that one? Never yogin. Yogin means youth, just like in Nectar of Devotion, it describes different ages of Poganda age, Kaishor age. So each of those ages together, like the age when the Damodar pastime, or the Devi Krishna pastime, or as Rasa Lila pastime, those are each different ages. Those are all taken together called his Yodana. Just like there's one, Pantapetra's wife is Yodana Nanda.
Govinda means youthful.
Govinda.
Every youthful. And another is the Swaraj. Swaraj. Fully independent or self-imposed in his knowledge. So I don't think we need to review. Do we need to review? Any questions? Yeah. Doesn't accompany us in the spiritual world. What Prabhupada said was that one realizes by dint of devotion that same Atma is seen by the pure devotee as Radha Krishna. Because that's the form, due to the love of the devotee, that's the form that the devotee, one who is devoted to Krishna, prefers to see. Just like the story of the gopis seeing the form of Narayan paying their obeisances and asking where is Krishna. And the force of their love, that Vishnu feature, soon is the original Krishna feature. So by dint of the love, devoted to Krishna, then they're seeing Krishna. Seeing Krishna in the heart of every human being. Now, the yogi sees Paramatma. Because these are pursuing this, the chit feature or knowledge feature. They're not approaching Paramatma with devotion. They want mystic powers, they want to know how to become lighter than the lightest and heavier than the heaviest. Acquire something from a distance or to create planets or destroy them. Mystic powers. So they're seeing the four-headed form of Vishnu. But the devotees are seeing Vishnu. And that for them, that's the spiritual world. Remember, there's Krishna, that's the spiritual world. And they're seeing Krishna everywhere.
This is Krishna's majority.
Huh?
You're saying that he's moving the Krishna. He sees Krishna everywhere.
Oh. I mean, for that, for when one's love for God is so pure, that at every moment one is simply desiring. At every moment. You're seeing at every moment. Or feeling separation from Krishna at every moment. And there, and then in that case, everything reminds of Krishna. Example of the Prabhupada is when you see when the parents, you see people do this sometimes in the car, they put their baby shoes on the rearview mirror. So wherever they see the baby shoes, they immediately think of their child. And in their mind, the attachment is very strong. They'll think of the fake child and all the super noises the child makes and the thing about it. Or a toy of the child. They immediately, the Prabhupada says it, they'll hear the voice just by seeing the voice. Just as anyway, if you take any object as it unto itself, as long as its relation with Krishna is established, then it's complete unto itself. Apart from Krishna, then it's separated energy. The example is just like a part of the body. If the finger is disgustingly separate body and is lying in the middle of the floor, it's nauseating. It's not very nice and it's not very useful either. But when that same finger is again connected or restores its natural position, then it's very useful. And it's so well, the same example, that when a part of the whole, when a part of Krishna emanates from Krishna, that part is, since it is from the complete whole, is complete. The living entity is complete unto itself. This is even one of the ways of reason that the Bhagavatam in the second canto goes through, a little exercise of saying, if you can study and understand yourself properly, then you can actually understand him properly. You can understand the Supreme. Because in order to understand the part, you also have to understand its relation to the whole. That conception or philosophic way of investigating things is dependent upon this Om-Purnam-Adaptanam-Gam verse. That the emanation of complete whole are also complete. But the same as Krishna can follow. As long as it's, the understanding is kept in mind that any quantity is different than the complete quantity of God. If you want exercise going through this guy that's staying here with us, or that is staying with us, Rajiv, he knows all the personal philosophy. He's had it up to here. So have a discussion with him sometime about, he's just trained up in Mayavadi philosophy. He knows all the arguments one after the next. And he has some, just like veterans have this disease that Prabhupada calls, we have faith in science. If science says something, then we believe it. There's good reason not to believe it, for so many reasons, but we have that tendency to have faith in something that science says. So he also has some tendency, just from his conditioning, against, you know, the arguments of Mayavad original philosophy. He appreciates Vaishnava philosophy, but it's, you know, it's very similar to someone who's doubting something that they heard differently from scientific background. It's very interesting to make that kind of comparison. It's like if you go to teach on a college campus with students at some point in time, they're definitely sold out to modern science, a scientific point of view. Just like Gurmash was saying that in Russia today, they're in education, in public education, very active in trying to establish atheism. They calculate the success of their educational process to a large extent in terms of how much it's atheistic. Just like Hirani Kashyap was trying to train up Prahlad. He was so frustrated that his all students in the school, his own son, became contaminated by theism. Where have you learned this?
In the beginning just now, you said that the charity of all is in the unique nature because people are envious and supernatural.
Can you elaborate? Well, let me at least repeat what Prabhupada said on this. The reference that I was making was that it was from describing what the meaning of Upanishad is. Upa means instruction. And Nishad means drawing one nearer. So those instructions that draw nearer to the Supreme don't necessarily have the name, form, qual, pastimes, and paraphernalia glorified, presented directly, but rather indirectly The problem is this, that on the one hand there's the platform of pure loving devotion to God, which all the resident spiritual world are participating in. And on the other end of the spectrum, you have conditioned souls who are madly pursuing sense gratification. So you can point, and you can bring people, indicate to them the conclusion of pure devotion that they rejected. So how to bring them closer to the point of accepting? That's because of so much other vast parts of the Vedic literature, including the Upanishads. The people who are intensely optical, they don't want to acknowledge the existence of the Supreme. They're brought indirectly to the point of acknowledging the existence of the Supreme. So rather than right away saying, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya, it's Om Purnama Vasudevam. Rather than addressing the Supreme as Vasudev, the son of Vasudev and Devaki, I offer my obeisances unto you in a prayerful way. Instead, the Supreme, Om, is complete Purnama. Pointing out qualities of Supreme that can lead one to conclude. So it's in relation to the Supreme, so it can lead one to conclude about the essence of the Supreme and the nature of the Supreme, and ultimately to the personality of the Supreme, but without hitting it on the head right from the very beginning. And it's on the base of all this other material that the Vedic literature composed of. What the translations that Prabhupada worked on, specifically the personalistic quote of the Vedas. However, there's vast other quote of the world. And those other quotes of the Vedas are describing how to achieve so many other things that was mentioned in class this morning. Worship this one to get that result, worship that one to get no. And people are thinking, oh, this is alright then. It's sanctioned by the scripture for me to sacrifice an animal or to worship a demigod or to do all these other things. Without, because they're attracted to that. They want the purification. So the chanting of Om is also for people who just, they want to worship the Supreme, but they don't want to be very personal about it. They don't want to recognize their, they want to acknowledge their subordinacy to the Supreme and their necessity for them to serve the Supreme. But at the same time address the Supreme. In other words, in the back of their, at least in the back of their mind, if not immediately as an intention, they want to become one with the Supreme. Acknowledge the existence of the Supreme so I can get out of this material world and join, merge with the quality of the spiritual world. Anyway, so it's to bring nearer.
Yes. That's the item of different steps.
That's why Prabhupada says that the process of devotion to God is the immediately attaining Brahmavayaya Kalpatam, the coming to the love of Brahman. Mam Chiyo Vyavana Bhakti Yogyana Sevati 7-17 many times. Brahmavayaya Kalpatam. One immediately comes to Brahman, immediately comes to Brahman platform. As soon as devotional service is being engaged. When you meet people, when you're chanting Anharinam Sankirtan, you're immediately bringing people to the level of Brahman. Just by hearing the holy name of Krishna. Even they're running down the street with fingers in their ears, they're coming to that platform. They're being engaged in devotional service immediately. It may end a moment later, or it may continue. That's another thing. So at least that by hearing Krishna, because you don't hear Krishna's name except on the spiritual plane. Or you give them some some opportunity to engage in devotion service. Give them some prasad, or give them some literature, or give them even just some katha, Krishna katha, some associate. Some relation to Krishna. Whereas the steps, the analogy that Prabhupada gave was, if you want to get off of the Empire State Building, you take the elevator, you can walk up, you know, 100 flights of stairs. Both of them get you to the top. But eventually, you know, it's so much later. That's what is being said here about about hearing. It just saves so much time. This is one of the things that we read about. The process of hearing, both the cyclic succession, saves us so much time. Whenever we try to calculate, investigate, check it out, research, even though it's already been researched, just because we're such doubtful persons, we'll come to the point where we can realize that the method where you can't get us there. We have to take up another method. And then you come to the point of hearing. It's just like this thing with, you know, that which brings you nearer to. Because we're envious of Krishna, we don't want to worship Krishna, we don't want to acknowledge Krishna's supremacy, we don't want to serve Him, we don't want to surrender Him, we don't want to take shelter of Him. We want to do it on our own strength. Whatever we do, we can acknowledge Krishna's presence, we don't want to acknowledge it. Just my good, you know, like the it's called Protestant ethic. By my hard work, started out a pauper, and I struggled hard, and I then climbed to the top. Krishna. Well, acknowledge Krishna, but it's I'm doing it. That's not the fact. Krishna is the one elevating at all circumstances. If there's any elevation, it's going on. So because we're envious of Krishna, all these other intermediate steps have to be taken. It's completely unnecessary. It's necessary. I mean, one doesn't have to go through all steps, but to the degree that one is envious, then one goes through all those steps, or some of those steps. It needs to provide it, so one can be brought a little closer.
Is it the same?
The danger is there that even you take something that's, that brings you closer, then you can be addicted to that. Just being pious man. Then you start thinking that religious means don't hurt anybody. Like there was a girl who was blabbering, jibber jabbering at the village program there, so about how just, you know, if you want to do something, you do it, and you understand your bodily qualities. People like that, they want to think of themselves as spiritual persons without God. They want the kingdom of God without God. So leave it out and just put in Om. You know, and pious and be good and don't hurt anyone. Be yourself, be spontaneous and free. That's spiritual.
Mm-hmm. It is for this reason that actually someone engages in devotional service is called unhappy. Because it would be very rare to see someone so well described.
Very rare, yeah, exactly. Exactly. The Mahatma is the long part that I didn't talk about the Mahatma. They're taking shelter, but Mahatma is one who takes shelter of Krishna's internal pleasure potency. That is important, his divine energy. Just as it's described in Nectar Devotion, Krishna very easily can award nutrition or material upliftment or and all these things are provided in the Vedic literature. But to award his devotee service, that's very rare, rarely achieved. And when he begins that devotional service, as long as they continue to properly perform that devotional service, they're guaranteed that once coming to that spiritual standard, they'll achieve perfection. They'll be with Krishna. Because they're with Krishna from the outset. And as long as they stay properly situated in that practice of devotional service, they'll attain Krishna. Guaranteed. Because that's a fact, you can understand from that that it's a very easy thing to stay properly situated in devotional service to Krishna. It's quite the contrary. It's very easy in the course of executing our devotional service to get pulled this way or that way away from the standard of devotion. It's very easy. So be wary at every step. Start next time with the invocation. This took 3 minutes to do this big intervention.
It's a very good.
It's the same thing to get the first.